will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO.
Welcome to another fantastic Tough Things First podcast. We're here talking with Robert Quinn about the fantastic semiconductor industry, probably the most important industry in the world. At least the technology is probably one of the most important in the world. And wars are going to be fought over that, I see going forward. I've invited Robert Quinn, who's a good friend of mine. I've known the industry for a number of years, to join me. We're going to talk about how R&D has changed in the industry over the last 50 years. So, Robert, welcome.
How you doing, Ray? It's great to talk to you.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. So let's jump right in. Let's talk about how R&D has changed.
R&D has just been, the investment has been well paid for. Companies such as TSMC have, you know, the last, as everybody knows, the TSMC has invested heavily into a lot of R&D and moving into these smaller nodes and utilizing the EUV equipment. And we've seen these R&D investments extremely pay off very well as they've been able to master the these going into the smaller nodes of down to 3 nanometers they're talking about now, but definitely into the 5 and 7 nanometer technology. But it's been amazing watching the changes, how the changes in other countries and other companies, they're finding out that maybe they need to invest a little bit more in R&D, I think. Because the leading the R&D has found to be one of the top things right now within semiconductor industries.
Well, you're talking about process R&D as opposed to design. So in that venue, back in the early 60s, let's say I talk about 60, 61, our R&D plant was in Palo Alto at Fairchild. And to put the R&D plant together, the little facility, it was probably no more than 3,000 square feet was the R&D room or the little fab that we had for R&D in Palo Alto. And to put that fab together cost us around $1 million to put the whole R&D fab in at Fairchild back in the early 60s. And here we are now talking, you know, it costs hundreds of millions of dollars to have an R&D fab put in the industry. Along that line, Robert, without the tools, the new tools that are going to be available, the R&D won't go anywhere. So, you know, because the industry's tools change every 5 years. So if we look at restricting the tools to countries that we would look as being not as being hostile to the United States, we can restrict their R&D development by virtue of just limiting the availability of the tools that will be necessary to develop the next technology in 5 years. So if the U.S. government or other friendly governments can put this, the, you know, the halt to these process tools being able to be sold to these hostile countries, we can stop their technology development and nothing flat. Just because in 5 years, the technology will change. And so we have the ability to control the R&D in the world, in the friendly part of the world, if we can stop these tools from being exported to these hostile countries.
Mm-hmm. Right now there's a lot of sanctions and different government sanctions being implemented in how they're sharing technology.
Yeah, but I want you to know that it only takes 5 years. So we can literally jump ahead if we can stop these tools from leaving, being exported to these hostile nations. Because even if they were able to get their hands on the new tools through you know, other sources, it will still take them several years to develop that technology just to get to the point where we are in that time frame. And then, of course, we'll be jumping ahead to the next technology. So I really see that the U.S. can, and other friendly nations can, stop the export of our technology if we can stop the tools from being exported. That's my view.
Definitely, definitely. I think there's a lot to being in the leader in within the within R&D. I think even other countries such as Putin has brought to attention that the leader of leader of technology will be the leader of the world. And so R&D kind of definitely makes countries or makes them or breaks them. That's for sure. And I think we're in quite a technology race right now. And to be able to, within the nations, I call it Silicon Nationalism. There's a lot of, it's a bit of a race for technology and the R&D to be within the country and trying to develop that R&D and making it happen.
Well, I can remember in 1987, I think it was, maybe I'm wrong. Let me think now. Maybe it was in the early 80s, sometime in the early 80s, when the wafer stepper went to Germany, to Siemens. Then that ended up in Austria. And then that from Austria went to Hungary, and then Hungary to Russia. And so it took them 10 years for them to be able to have access to the to that stepper technology. And in fact, one of the engineers that worked for me at Micrel actually used the stepper that I developed in Hungary when he was just a young engineer in Hungary before it ended up in Russia. So it takes at least 10 years to develop a piece of hardware from, even if they have one to copy. So I think for those of you who are listening to this podcast, if you can show your influence, get a hold of your congressmen, your senators, and just really implore them to restrict the technology and the equipment from being able to be exported out of our country so that we can preserve this very, very valuable technology.
And being able to also work with other nations, I think, is incredibly important as well, as far as our friends that are at play that are, you know, Taiwan and other countries that are even steps ahead of us, right? And the development of their and utilizing, bringing the nodes down and bringing the new technology in.
But they don't develop the tools. We develop the tools. Okay, so the tools are developed in the U.S. Well, some of it in Europe, Netherlands, and so forth, the tools are developed. But the friendly countries, if they can join with the U.S. and halting the exportation of our technology, our recent technology tools to these hostile countries, that will really help. So let's jump into design too, because that's changing quite a bit. And then we'll end this podcast. So in design, back in the day, back when I was getting my degree, a double E, you didn't have to have a programming class. But today's students graduating from college and double E have to have a programming class, because almost all of the semiconductor circuits coming out do have memory and processing capability, and knowing how to program them is key to developing these new circuits. So that I see as a different in trend too, is that we're getting more and more memory and processing processing circuitry incorporated in the design of almost every single semiconductor. So the need or the technology education has changed over the last 50 years also, Robert.
Yes, definitely. A lot of the equipment on the tools has changed. You know, we've gone from the PLCs, I'm sure you were familiar with back mm-hmm. tools back in the day, and a lot of those have changed, and some of them actually stayed the same. They've gone from process logic controllers, easily programmable process logic controllers, to super complicated equipment that no longer just uses that old simple PLC technology.
So. Well, I can see that with the development of AI, that at some point, we're using artificial intelligence, we should be able to design a circuit without even using engineers. In other words, all you got to do is just develop a block, technology block, and then the circuits will be created simultaneously using artificial intelligence to create these very complex circuits. I think we're close to that now, but we're going to get even closer to it, I think, over the next 5 years.
I think so, too. I think that, you know, the coding is going to be more of putting puzzle pieces together in the future. And, you know, putting those puzzle pieces together to block them into their place. And then that'll be the computers will be doing the rest of the back end work.
Absolutely. And even in the evaluation of the circuitry is becoming, you know, just to do the testing of the circuitry is becoming much more complex also. So more education, more knowledge about programming circuitry is becoming even more key. Well, with that in mind, Robert, let's conclude this podcast with a shout out to all people who are listening to contact their congressmen and senators to please stop the export of our valuable technology to these hostile countries. Robert, thanks so much for joining us today. We're really grateful to be able to have you and be able to talk about the industry as how much has changed and where it's going, and just appreciate what you do. Robert can be followed on LinkedIn under Robert Quinn. Please read my book, Tough Things First, which has been out now for 7 years. It's a textbook on how to run a company. Also, my book, Zen is Zen 1, Zen is Zen 2, and now Zen is Zen 3 is coming out in July. Please pick up that book from your favorite bookstore and book retailer. And please join us for our next podcast. Thank you very much, and we'll be talking to you later.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.